Hi, everyone. Welcome to Waste 360's Nothing Wasted podcast. On every episode, we invite the most interesting people in waste, recycling, and organics to sit down with us and chat candidly about their thoughts, their work, this unique industry, and so much more. So thanks for listening and enjoy this episode. Hi, everyone. This is Liz Bothwell from Waste 360 with Ryan Shanicky, co-founder of Ocean Cycle. Hi, Ryan, and thanks for being on the show.
Hey, Liz. How are you? Thanks so much for having us.
I'm so glad you're here. And normally, Ryan, we start at the beginning. So please tell me about how you ended up fighting to keep plastics out of the ocean.
Yeah. Well, the beginning, right? Long story. But, I think if I were to trace back my roots of being interested in waste and pollution issues, it actually would go back to the sixth grade when back at that time, one of the major environmental problems I think we were all worried about was landfills filling up with things like bags and not going away, paper bags and those types of things. And so we started in a science class, me and a group of people started a reusable lunch bag program, right? So where you could, where we would make and sell reusable bags, and then, people would use those instead of using single-use plastic bags. So I guess you could say always had an interest in environmental issues and sustainability issues and consumption issues. With ocean plastics and ocean plastic pollution in particular, I think it began for me really around, had been aware of the issue for many years, but really began around 2015. I think at that point, we didn't know a lot about ocean plastic pollution, but a woman named Dr. Jenna Jambeck, the University of Georgia, had just released a study in about plastic pollution, how much plastic is in the water, how does it end up in the water, and I saw that, and it got me even more interested in the issue, and then ultimately, it started one of my first efforts, which was a eyewear company with a friend, where we made sunglasses out of ocean-bound plastics, and from there just began to work in the issue more and more, and ultimately ended up where we're at Ocean Cycle.
Wow, that's amazing! You started so young. How impressive is that? I love it.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing to do at that age, for sure.
So now you're at Ocean Cycle. So please tell me more about what Ocean Cycle does.
Sure. Yeah. So Ocean Cycle, we're a U.S.-based company. We're what's known here in the U.S. as a public benefit corporation. And so that means that we are a company who established with a social mission. We truly have like a dual bottom line. We have a mission that we adhere to in everything we do. It drives the core of our activities. And the general mission we established Ocean Cycle with was to reduce plastic pollution flowing into the ocean. And so we approach that problem and have approached that problem in a number of ways, but I would say that the two core things we do, what we're most known for is that we've developed and operate a chain of custody certification for ocean and ocean-bound plastics. And the way that works is that we certify recyclers in developing countries. We work with them to trace their material down to point of collection, and then develop a documented chain of custody from that collection point up through production and processing and shipment. So ultimately, we can trace the containers of material back to their points of origin. When we look at the ocean plastic issue, it is primarily a land-based issue. 90% of the plastic in the water is coming from land, and so we really, as a core, focus on the ocean-bound plastic and capturing plastic before it gets into the water. And the way we define and look at ocean-bound plastic is taking some insight from that Jambeck paper that I mentioned, but we sort of define it as plastic waste collected from within 30 miles of the coastline in an area that lacks a formal waste management system. So everywhere we're working is informal waste management. It's not organized by a local government or a national government on any scale. It's all local entrepreneurs and people working to manage these waste issues. And within the certification, we have a pretty extensive social baselining and monitoring process where we approve and audit collect all collection points within a network that we work in. And then the other piece of Ocean Cycle is that we will interface and work directly with brands who are looking to use ocean-bound plastics in their products. And so that could be helping on messaging and story development. It could be helping on engaging in the communities where the waste is collected. It could be helping on supply chain integration, but really sort of run the gamut. We don't actually, as a company, we don't sell material and we don't make any products ourselves. So we really look at ourselves as a third party in the space.
Got it. Okay. Now, I mean, you don't necessarily have to mention any names, but can you walk through how you've helped a brand? Because I know, you know, like you said, your model touches on so many parts of the value chain. Can you talk about how you've walked a brand through that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, certainly we work with quite a number of brands, quite a number of the CPGs out there, and we have some great partners, I think. You know, and we're very much a partnership model, right? Because we're not selling material, we're not shipping material, and we're not making products. So we look to partner with all those in that value chain. Probably one of our biggest partners, or well, our biggest partner is a brand called Prevented Ocean Plastic, and they are definitely the largest user of ocean-bound materials out there. We certify all the material in their supply chain, and they work with a number of the, really in the UK is where they're most prevalent, but you will see them working with companies here in the US like Zen Water, who's a newly launched bottled water brand who does 100% ocean-bound bottles in partnership with us and Prevented Ocean Plastic. Then you'll find Prevented Ocean Plastic fish trays and chicken trays in most of the major grocery stores like Lidl in the UK and Europe. And, you know, that the process is a lot of education for the brands. I think we spend a lot of time talking with them about how waste is collected in these countries, how we monitor that collection, how we engage and give back into these communities. In addition, we work with another company, a large company called Bunzl. And not a lot of, I think people would know Bunzl as a household name, but they are a huge company and they do logistics and distribution services for most of the major big box stores and a lot of food and other retail. And so they essentially provide everything to these stores that that you can't buy, right? So all the things these stores need to operate. And as part of that, they provide a lot of bags, a lot of reusable bags into these stores. And so they had wanted to make a bag out of ocean-bound plastics. And but they're really accustomed to going to, you know, contract manufacturing to one of their partners overseas and saying, hey, we want this bag. We'd like it to look like this. This is the price range we're trying to do. And they'll come back with quotes and options. And so Bunzl really has not spent a lot of time or has a lot of experience in getting the fabric made or the yarns made or all those types of things. So in that case, they brought us in and we helped them figure out that supply chain, how the yarn and fabrics could be made. And now they're selling, you know, bags with Ocean Cycle certified materials into, you know, grocery stores like here in the US, like Aldi and Albertsons, ShopRite, and then you'll find some more of their bags in Macy's as well.
Oh, that's great. So, Ryan, how can consumers feel confident when they do buy products with that certification label on it?
I think, you know, we have a pretty extensive process where we're pretty open and transparent with the process. We have a list of standards that the suppliers and that the recyclers are meant to adhere to. And then, you know, we're really involved in the communities. We are a certification and we operate a certification, but we really use certification as a way to reduce ocean plastic pollution and improve lives in coastal communities, right? And so it's sort of our tool to do that. And with that, you know, we're adhering to really high standards. And I think so, you know, you can, I think that the brands and the companies that we work with, they definitely put us through the ringer when it comes to compliance and auditing. And so, you know, I think that's a big piece of it.
Oh, that's huge. And I know it sounds like you do a lot of actual work on the ground. How important is that?
I mean, it's the most important. I think, you know, this whole chain, everything starts with the people on the ground collecting the material, collecting the waste. And so, you know, oftentimes you find that those are folks who are living in the margins or, you know, using plastic waste as a way to make all their living or subsidize their income. And so it's really important that we engage in those communities and that we know what's going on in those communities, because ultimately, if you don't have a healthy collector community, you don't have the supply chain, right? You don't have the material. And so, you know, we do our best to understand what's going on in those communities and give back into those communities, you know, making sure that there's food and water in times of need, for sure.
Oh, that's so great. Can you paint a picture of what life is like for some of these waste pickers in the communities you're working in?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, first it's really a hard job, right? I mean, you know, you're collecting waste and going around oftentimes in countries that are quite hot and humid, and either carrying that material yourself or putting that material on your bike or your scooter and bringing it to a place where you can sell that material. So, you know, much like we might get up and do emails all day or be on phone calls, you know, they're up and they're out there collecting plastic, you know, 5, 6, 7 days a week to make a living. And so it can be difficult, of course, because plastic is a commodity, and recycled plastic is has been a commodity that's been, you know, under a lot of pressure lately, right? In terms of price, virgin plastic has dropped below the price of recycled. So the pricing has been crunched, and ultimately the people at the bottom are getting crunched when it comes to those types of, you know, how much money they're able to make. But you know, that's part of the reason that we introduced the certification, because we feel it's a way, again, to understand what's going on in these communities. But it, by developing this on a business basis, right, we were able to add a bit of a premium to that material and keep these networks functioning.
Absolutely. That's great. So what do you say to critics who claim that this is not a US problem, the plastics?
Well, I mean, the U.S. is the number one consumer of plastic, right? I mean, we recycle about 4% of our plastics, maybe right now, maybe 9. You know, we've brought plastic to the world for sure. And listen, plastic's important, and it's especially important in these communities where there's no potable water, right? So you do, to be safe, you drink from bottled water, which is the majority of the waste we're seeing and collecting out there, right? But it certainly is a U.S. problem. I mean, it's something that we've helped bring to the world, and I think we have a responsibility to help them deal with that waste. I mean, you know, it's easy for us to say because we have advanced and we have waste management systems. While we might not recycle a high percentage of our waste, you know, we have curbside collection. You know, you can, you know, you're not there, there's networks that you can, you know, you can put your trash in a bin and someone will come collect it once a week. And it's not really like that out there. So, and listen, we're still sending a lot of our waste overseas. So it certainly is a huge problem. I believe there was a recent study by Dr. Jambeck and some others that showed that the US and the UK are number one when it comes to plastic, and we export out the most. So it would be hard to say it's not our problem.
Absolutely. So how has the pandemic affected your work?
Yeah, I mean, in a number of ways. I think, you know, obviously, like we like to be involved in these communities and know what's going on. So the number one, you know, when it's difficult to travel out to them, it's difficult for us to see as much on the ground. Although there have been some benefits of that, because it's as we've grown, it's allowed us to grow our presence and the people that we have in the field. So that's been good. I think, you know, initially when we saw the pandemic, if the pressure was really, again, in these communities, you know, there was the demand initially for material dropped, which means that people who were collecting and using it to make a living were didn't have a as much, you know, they didn't have the ability to sell as much. And so, or, you know, everyone was shut down because we weren't sure what was going to happen with the pandemic, and we were all nervous. And so I think it really affected those communities. I mean, we did our best to support with, you know, with food and protective gear and stuff like that, because a lot of the people, you know, they didn't have the option to stop collecting. So we had to make sure that they were safe and healthy, and did a little bit of that work. But I think, you know, you've now seen crunches in global shipping as a result of the pandemic. So it's made a lot of the collection more difficult. It's brought prices up a bit in terms of like the shipping costs and those types of things. So it's certainly been more difficult. But I will say that, you know, as we appear to be coming out of the pandemic and the interest for this type of material and the interest in what's going on in these communities is huge. I mean, it's exploding for sure.
Oh, that's great. That's good to hear. And then how is the, I saw a couple of videos that you've done, and they were great to really show what's happening in the countries that you're working in. How's the education part going in those countries?
Well, I think it just depends. I think you're probably referring to some of the ones we posted on Instagram with my business partner and co-founder, Robert Goodwin. So he's really been our COVID road warrior for sure. He's been out, he did make some efforts to go out into the field late last year and touch base with a lot of our partners out there and also look on how we can expand the collection as we come out of the pandemic and improve collection even. So, yeah, I think the education just depends on the community, you know. And so, like as an example, you know, in Indonesia where those videos were shot, you know, there is these informal networks of plastic collection and sales and those types of things. So there is people do recognize that there's value for plastic, right? So there are people out collecting it and developing the supply chains and those types of things. I think. That we can, and we can talk about it this a little bit more, but the hard part is getting at some of those lower value plastics, you know, the films and those types of things. And so in those communities, I think, you know, there's a lot of knowledge. There's certainly education that that does need to go on sometimes in what plastics and how clean the plastics are. But a lot of times these local collection centers are going to post what they, you know, what they're willing, what they collect. They work with collectors to make them understand, you know, that, you know, if you sell cleaner material, we'll give you a better price for it, those types of things. And then, so you go into a place like that and it's a matter of, you know, how can we map this system out? How can we make sure that there are the proper checks and traceability in place? And then, you know, surveying and finding out what do they need to improve. So in some cases, maybe they need a covered area for sorting or drying the plastic because, you know, you have the wet and dry season in a place like Indonesia. And, you know, in the dry season, plastic dries great out in the open in the sun. In the wet season, not so much. So understanding those needs and what those communities needs are part of what we do. But then, you know, education, you know, we are about to take a trip over to the Democratic Republic of the Congo to look at some of the plastic waste management over there. And as we understand, there's not really a lot in that people don't understand that plastic has a value. So in that case, it's a whole different system of how do you get the word out and how do you establish collection points so that the people in the community know there's a value for plastic and they can bring it in and sell it and get money for it. So it kind of varies depending on the place you're in.
Oh, I bet. And I would like to dive a little bit into low-value plastics. I mean, that seems to be an issue worldwide. What are you seeing on the ground?
Well, I mean, they're the hardest plastics to get, right? They're the hardest plastics to collect because they are lower value and because, you know, the people who collect these plastics, they're smart and they're savvy. And so, you know, they are not going to spend twice as long, you know, maybe even more collecting the same weight value in these films as they could with like a, you know, a PET bottle or some sort of other drink container, right? And so that is part of the problem is that the value on the, you know, for these materials when they're recycled is low and it's, and then the price of virgin is even lower, right? So it's very difficult to develop like a sustainable business model that doesn't have to be subsidized right now. We do think that, and we do some work in this space that, you know, once you can establish a profitable value chain and business model for some of the higher value plastic, it gives you the opportunity to get at some of those low value plastics because those networks are out there, right? And you have people who understand and know how to collect, But ultimately, we have to send the right price signals to those folks that it is worth their time to collect that material. And that is, I think, more of a function of the market and the people who would want to buy that on the secondary market, you know, the recycled market.
Right. And are you seeing different types of low-value plastic being produced in certain areas that would not be produced in the U.S.?
Well, I mean, you see a lot of like the sachets and those types of things. You know, and it ultimately comes down to like a function of people's income, right? Because they don't necessarily make a lot or have a lot of extra money there. You know, when they buy things like shampoo or you know, soaps, and they're often buying them in these small like packages and sachets, right? Because it's cheaper. I mean, ultimately, in the long run, it's more expensive because they're having to continue to buy these smaller packets, but they buy them in those sachets, and then there's not really a disposal system. So ultimately, you know, they end up on the ground, or maybe they're burned, you know, and obviously their burning has a lot of really bad effects as well. But, you know, we see a lot of those. So you see a lot of like this multi-layer packaging that's also really hard to recycle. Within those sachets, you know, sometimes in cases, you see like little sachets or little almost like water packets, right? Because they're cheaper than buying a larger bottle of water. So you'll see that kind of stuff. You see a lot of these like cups almost. They're like water cups. And so it's a cup, you know, and then on top of it, it has a film and you put a straw through it and drink it. And those are pretty prevalent. And you see a lot of those. I mean, one of the issues that's been getting a lot of attention, or was getting a lot of attention a couple months ago, was all the pollution on the beaches in Bali and in Indonesia. And so if you look at those photos, you'll actually see just tons of these cups, right? They're the cups. They've got these films. They're very hard to recycle because the film, you know, is different than the cup, and there's glue around the film, and so you've got to get that all off if you want to make it recyclable. So you see a lot of that, and a lot of packaging design, you know, for cost that we don't necessarily see here in the U.S. for sure.
Oh, I bet. And do you think the education is helping on the ground?
Well, I mean, you know, the people know of the problem and they see it. I mean, they live it, right? And yeah. So, and the people who collect know that, like, hey, these cups, like, you know, we might be able to get some value out of this cup because it's a heavier plastic and more of a sought after material. But getting this film off the top is like a lot of work, right? And it's very difficult to do. And so that, you know, throws off what they can get for the material. So I think, you know, is it a question of educating them or educating those who are producing the packaging, right? And I think it might be the latter, right? Because the people will figure out ways to do it. They'll figure out innovative ways to maybe make building materials out of it, which, again, they're burning in open pits and melting down in open pits. So I think ultimately, you know, they don't have a lot of choice on a day-to-day basis about, you know, what kind of, do I buy this plastic or that plastic? I mean, they have to buy what they can afford and they have to buy what's available. So it's, I think it's more of an education for those who are putting that packaging in the market than the people who are ultimately have to collect it just to keep, you know, their environment clean.
Absolutely. And I mean, I know we struggle in the U.S. with EPR, right? But some countries in Europe are doing a good job, some areas of Asia. I know you're working in undeveloped countries, but is there any momentum with EPR happening anywhere that you're working?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're seeing proposals for sure, because I think they're all exploring, like, how can we manage this waste and how can we create, you know, revenue streams or money to help us manage this waste, right? Because it is, I mean, you see these pictures in Bali, you go around to a lot of these places, especially ones where they're still accepting our trash, you know, and you just have these huge dumps, right, and this plastic everywhere. And so I think they're struggling with how they can manage that, you know, especially like, I mean, you know, we work in several countries, but Indonesia is a great example because it's this island nation, right? So it's so hard to, you know, to do some sort of uniform policy. I would say that, in terms of policies, they are extremely helpful. I mean, as I mentioned, we have this great partner in Prevented Ocean Plastic, who's doing a lot of great stuff in Europe and the UK, and most of that is driven by this 30% recycled content minimum that I believe is coming into effect. I want to say it's next year, but I could be wrong on that. But that has driven a lot of our of the demand for the material we certify. And it's been very helpful for some of the recyclers in Indonesia. I mean, especially during the pandemic. I mean, I think one of the only recyclers that was running in Indonesia was the partner that we work with there, who was selling to the Prevented Ocean Plastic program. So, those policies are extremely helpful. I mean, if the U.S. had a recycled content minimum, I think it would one, change how much we have to recycle here. Right. So, and two, I think it would, because our plastic appetite is so large, it would force us to look outside and for material, and that would hopefully drive some more demand, which can drive more infrastructure and collection in these countries, and ultimately less pollution.
Definitely, it surely has an impact, and I know. You're part of Dave Ford's organization and the Ocean Leadership Network. It seems like really getting momentum going for some sort of Paris Agreement for plastics. Are you optimistic about this? Do you think this can happen in the 1 year time frame that everyone is hoping for, or is it a longer term initiative that we just all have to be patient about?
Yeah, I mean, Dave and the OP, the Ocean Plastic Leadership Network, are great, and I think they're doing a lot of great work. And you know, it's certainly been impressive to see how fast they've been able to build just a huge base of support in companies and organizations across the spectrum involved. I think we just actually had the initial calls among the membership about these global treaty dialogues last week, and so. It sounds like it's just getting going. I mean, I would love to think that it's going to happen in a year time frame. I don't know. I mean, when you're bringing in so many different players and so many different opinions, that might be a little aggressive to think of that. And then, but you never know. I mean, if we can not only get the leadership of some of these big corporations to agree on some binding and some real steps, we could move pretty quickly. And then ultimately, if we can get the U.S., as the country, the government, to get behind it, it could move. I mean, I've mentioned a few times, we're the number one consumer and ultimately the number one polluter. And so we have a huge responsibility. And without our movement here in the States, it's going to be hard to do anything big globally.
Absolutely. And I'm hopeful, too, that, putting a stake in the ground and saying, we want this to be reviewed in a year, and having all these stakeholders together, hopefully the momentum will keep going and progress will be made there. So I know we talked a lot about, Ryan, about sort of the informal waste industry, right, that you deal with on a mm-hmm. regular basis. Is there anything that you think, waste and recycling professionals in North America can do to help with this challenge of plastics?
Yeah, I mean, I think, certainly there's expertise in recycling systems that I think could be used, and it does. I mean, there's great companies going and setting up great infrastructure. So, there's always the debate, I think, especially, and you hear a lot of it on these global treaty dialogues about, is recycling the solution? Will it work? Is it, why are we focusing on infrastructure? And I think, our view is that, whatever you think about the future of plastic, it's pretty clear that there is a plastic pollution problem in these countries right now, and they don't have enough infrastructure. So infrastructure is certainly a needed first step in a lot of these places. So I think, providing some of the expertise, maybe when it comes to the processing of plastics, would be helpful. I don't know how much this is the industry or just our policies, but we could stop sending our garbage overseas, which might force us here to deal with it in a better way. And then ultimately we would see less pollution in these countries. So that could be a big one. But yeah, I, you know, I think it always helps to engage. I think, what we see is that if there is a demand for this material is a huge one. We always start with demand, and so, whether it's the recycling industry or ultimately the companies who are buying those materials, buying and using ocean-bound plastics from these places actually creates the systems and the incentives to collect that material. So the more demand there is for an ocean-bound plastic, the more we're going to be able to get off, to keep out of the ocean, and ultimately the more income we're going to generate into these local communities for sure.
Absolutely. And I mean, speaking of end markets and creating that demand, are you seeing more brands come to you and want that content and or help with their sustainability goals?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there's probably not a CPG large or medium that we haven't talked to, and there's definitely a lot of demand. I think there's a lot of wanting to understand how the material is collected. The ocean plastic, the pollution problem is understood enough where people understand that it's collected by, it's collected by hand, by people, and this is a people operation. And so I think when you talk with the brands, there's a lot of checks and concerns about how do you ensure that these networks are safe, that they're not child labor, that they're not forced labor, which is, of course, a big component of what we're doing in monitoring these networks and doing the surveys and baselining we do. But yeah, the interest is through the charts. We would definitely like to see more people follow up interest with buying material. But interest is there for sure.
Okay, good. Hey, that's a start. And like you said, I mean, it's a human industry, right? We're all humans. We're all doing work, and you're really seeing it on the ground in the developing countries. Do you think that we are elevating you and the work you're doing and other people like you, are we elevating the perception of waste workers around the world? I think it's, I was on that call with Ocean Leadership Plastics Network, and I was in a workshop with a few people from India, and it seems so easy, right? Because we all, that's the one thing we can all agree on, right? The 165 people who were invited to that. And even when you think about the world, one thing we can all agree on is that we want to elevate that perception, right? And we care about humans. So why isn't it easier to do? What can we do, even in North America, to help elevate the perception of these people and really help their stories be told?
Well, I think it starts with, and you hear this, and there's certainly some great groups on the call who are elevating this, and we talk about it, our partners talk about it, others talk about it. I mean, the people who collect, sometimes they're called waste pickers, sometimes they're called rag pickers, all those types of things. I mean, we like to call them entrepreneurs because that's really what they are. They're, in most cases, they're starting and running their own business, and they're making a lot of those important decisions that you need to make on the ground. So I think maybe potentially reframing how we talk about the folks, but, they are the heroes of this movement, right? They are they're the base of the pyramid. Without those people on the ground working in these countries, nothing gets picked up, right? Nothing gets collected. It all goes into the water, or it all gets burnt or something like that. So, I think giving them their proper due, there's still a lot, we know a lot about these networks, but there's still a lot that's, not understood. Right. And so, or catalog, how big are these networks? How many people are actually working in them? That type of thing would be good to know. And, but I mean, if we really want to help those people, we've got to help create the systems so that there is plastic collection, right? I mean, at Ocean Cycle, we're often we really would like to work ourselves out of business for sure, right? Yeah. And so if we can use the demand for this type of material to create infrastructure and turn that into ultimately someday a non-informal system that operates in a better way, that would be great. Certainly there's like things to think about, because if you're transitioning from formal to informal, how do you make sure the people who have been doing the work for decades are not left behind, and make sure they're involved? But ultimately it's demand. If we in the US demand more ocean-bound material, or demand that, the companies who use plastic are using ocean-bound material, they're going to have to go and source out of these places. And ultimately, that's going to allow companies like us and our partners and the people we work with on the ground to improve the infrastructure, to increase the amount of money that's paid for these materials at the collection level. And I think that's going to drive the best overall improvement.
Definitely. So tell me, what's next for you and for Ocean Cycle?
Well, I think we're going to keep going. We are, Ocean Cycle, I think one of the things we're really proud of is that, we were the first company to really be in the certification space for ocean-bound plastics, bringing transparency and trust into the market. We're the largest certifier of material. We do 1,200 to 1,500 tons every month, and we're really growing. And so I think we're focused on growing our presence. So we're growing to 5 additional countries right now. We're focused on, working with the users and the partners to make sure that, they're telling the best story about their brand, and focused on, working in these communities and making sure that, that ultimately things are improving there. But I think, it's, as mentioned, we've got a lot of interest, so we're trying to make sure that when And these big brands do say, "Hey, we're ready to pull the trigger," and some of them have, that we're ready with the base of material. We certainly have a good amount right now, but always could have more sources for sure.
Absolutely. And hopefully you get more aid in that down the road too. So, this has been such a great conversation, Ryan. Is there anything else you want to share before I let you go about your busy day?
Well, I think one of the things that I, we as a at Ocean Cycle and our partners, we like to focus on working with procurement departments often, because what we're hoping to do is get these brands to make this, not marketing departments, and make a decision based on material and based on something that they can incorporate into their supply chain on an ongoing basis, right? And so I think that's one of the big things that and keys that we do, is we really try to engage the procurement folks and get them on board, because that's going to drive the sustained purchasing and change that we want for sure.
Definitely. And do you find that you start with a brand person or a marketing person because this is kind of under their world, and then you end up working with a procurement person, or how does that usually go in terms of info?
We typically go the other way. I mean,
Oh.
we a lot of times we're starting with the procurement folks and then working our way up to the marketing folks. Because again, what we want to do is we want brands to be able to incorporate this inherent purpose in what they're doing every day. Not, there's certainly marketing value to it. There's no question about that. But we want the initial value to be like with what they're doing, with what the procurement is doing. We want the people at the company to feel that value, and then, hey, there's a great story to tell about that too. So definitely make sure you do that. But let's start and make sure it's a material that you can incorporate, every day across all your products.
Absolutely. Oh, this has been great. I'm so grateful for the work you're doing on the ground and the people you are helping to elevate and the material that you're helping to move. I think this is awesome. And the material you're keeping out of the ocean. And I love a lot of your videos where you really state that 80% of the plastic comes from land. So yes, it's an ocean problem and we have to clean up what's there, but let's also try to stop putting so much in on the ground and in.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you. And I mean, thank you for helping us tell the story more and elevate the work that we're doing. We really are grateful to be on and tell more about the work that we're doing, and really the work that the people on the ground are doing. I think we're just helping to create systems that make that easier for brands and companies to use. But ultimately, the people who are doing the hard work are the people collecting the plastic and processing it and recycling it on a daily basis. So we hope to continue to support them as we move forward, for And but yeah, thanks so much for having us on.
Oh, thank you. And please keep in touch. I want to just follow you guys and see how your journey continues and the important work you're doing. Thank you for listening. It would mean the world if you would take a moment to rate or review this podcast. And if you share it with us on one of our social networks, we are giving out some fun, nothing wasted podcast swag. So just tag us and see what you get. Thanks so much.